This is the Cherry Leaf Podcast.
Mad World Europe is your best learning and professional development opportunity of the year. The conference debuts this September in Prague, Czech Republic, and features industry thought leaders from organizations such as Visa, Nestle, and TCOM. Full schedule and event details can be found at www.madcapsoftware.com.
I should do an introduction, and that is to say hello and welcome to another episode of the Cherry Leaf Podcast. And I have another opportunity to interview somebody, and that is Stella Crowhurst, who is the Content Strategy Director of Worldpay. And well, we've done some bits and pieces for Worldpay in the past, but I've also seen Stella speak at two Write the Docs conferences about the changes at Worldpay in terms of the new documentation and portals it's been creating. It's really interesting stuff. So Stella's kindly agreed for me to ask some questions about that, and so we can find out more. Hello, Stella.
Hello.
So I think it might be good to start off with some background on Worldpay and what it is. Well, let me ask one question at a time. That's probably the most sensible way of doing something. So Worldpay has been taken over by an American company recently. It's taken on the Worldpay name. So Worldpay has become something slightly different from what it was a year ago. What is Worldpay?
Worldpay is a global leader in payments processing technology. So what we basically do is handle all the payments, whether they are from a point of sale within a shop or online. We work with customers that range from the large corporates, in retail or in digital, to the small and medium enterprises, like, a little shop that sells both to customers in their site or online. So, yeah, we actually went through a merger just a few months ago, and now we have become the largest payment processor worldwide. It's good, but on the other side, it puts quite a lot of pressure on, because we obviously have a very strong and tough competition, also in documentation.
Yes, so I think my local news agent has a Worldpay terminal, and I think McDonald's, if I remember correctly, if you pay by card in McDonald's at the till, I think that's a Worldpay little machine as well that you pay on.
Yeah, and some of them are in our name, so we handle the whole payment using our brand, but in most cases, we handle the payment for our customers, so you don't even realize that payment has gone through us. Like, for example, we've got customers like Tesco and many other large retailers in the UK.
If I remember correctly, with the stuff that we did, there was overseas, there were companies like Yandex and a lot of different Chinese payment processors that you partner with to where they're, I guess, the front end that the customer sees for the payment side of things.
Yes, exactly. We also have lots of partners. And that is, I think, one of the advantages of this large new corporate is that we have access to payments in different regions through partners or directly. And so that's why we are now a very large company.
Your role within Worldpay, title I think is Content Strategy Director. What does that mean?
Yeah, so when I started working at Worldpay, now it's 3 years and a half ago, I started as a technical documentation and communications director. And my team was taking care mostly of, traditional technical documentation published as a PDF. And in these 3 years, we went through a massive change in terms of both our processes, but also our deliverables. And so I think this definition now of content strategy is more suitable to describe what I and my team do now. We really think about our customers, the experience we want to provide to them, and we build a strategy, and from that we then create experiences, documentation, journeys. So yeah, that's my role.
Now, your background is from manufacturing, and I know from one of the presentations I've seen, you adopted lean methods and some agile methods to make changes to the team that creates the content. And I'm just interested what it was like to sort of apply techniques that you might more often see in business consultancy or manufacturing and apply those to a TechPubs team.
Well, I always worked in technical documentation. So, and before joining Worldpay, I was working for an engineering company, which went through the process of moving from traditional manufacturing to lean manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest changes that we went through at the time was to move from traditional engineering and product development to lean product development. Mm-hmm. So, when we went through this change, I had the chance to attend and work very closely with lean experts. Also from the European Union, there is actually a document which was put together by a commission within the European Union about lean product development, which was really, really inspiring. And this was a waste analysis for product development. So at the time when I saw this, I thought, this is perfect for documentation. I mean, it's something that you can apply to any kind of product development, but also any kind of content development. There isn't really much difference now between engineering, so designing a new machine, and designing new content. So that is what I did. The first thing when I arrived at Worldpay, now the team was working in a very traditional way, but most of all, they were not really working closely with the development teams, and they were really struggling. So the first thing we did was to do a waste analysis, which was really interesting because the outcome highlighted a lot of things like over-engineering, that is, in traditional lean terminology, would mean writing too much content when it is not necessary. For example, or lack of processes and things like that. And so that allowed me to put in place a number of measures that have helped the team work so much better and also improve the content. And I think for those who have observed the content that we were writing, I don't know, 3 years ago and what we are publishing now, I think the change is really clear, you know, to everyone, the improvement.
Was that a one-off process or are you continuing to use lean methods and measuring waste on a continuous basis, or is it something that you will do maybe every year or every 6 months or something like that?
Yeah, that is something that we keep on doing because obviously year after year, while you improve processes and ways of working, there are maybe other issues that you can tackle now this way. Also, I think it is a good approach considering also how quickly, for example, things are changing also inside our development teams. When I started working here, they had just introduced Agile, and now they are moving to Safe Agile. And some teams are following an approach to Agile, which is similar to what Spotify uses. So we've got different ways of working, and we're constantly changing and improving, which is what you would expect from a modern company, you know? So I think this kind of analysis is something that you should do, once a year, you know?
So you've embedded the technical communicators, technical authors in the development teams now, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we have, exactly. One of the things that I learned from conferences and also meetups, like for example, the Write the Docs or API the Docs, was that most companies, especially the ones working in e-commerce or in software, they were starting to adopt an approach to documentation similar to what development teams were using with code. So we've started using the same kind of approach. And also due to the fact that there were all these changes in the way that development teams were working, we managed to fit, let's say, our processes within theirs.
Yeah.
And so now, for example, documentation is part of the user stories of the sprint, if it is necessary. Obviously, sometimes it's not needed. But if it is, it is part of the user stories. And it is the development team that owns documentation. So my team is more like a team of service providers. We are the ones that can create the content, but mm-hmm. the content is owned by the development team. So the same thing they do for code, no? So they are responsible for this content as well as they are for code, and they're responsible for keeping it updated and making sure that the technical writer is kept informed and is part of the sprint.
The tasks go on the Kanban board, and is everything completed within each sprint cycle, or is some stuff done in a sprint and then other stuff added to it in a second sprint? How do you get everything done within 2 week or 4 week cycle of deliverables?
Our cycle is usually 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what we did, we decided that obviously it's very hard to keep the pace of a development team. And by the time the development team has finished developing, it is usually too late to write documentation. No, that's a problem. So what we decided to do was that we needed an MVP, a minimum viable product in terms of documentation. And this consists of code and really basic instructions on how to use it. We usually work on this MVP the second week of the sprint, mm-hmm. so that when the sprint is completed, we have this sort of minimum documentation.
Yeah.
When the new sprint starts, during the first week of the sprint, when we usually haven't got enough material to work on, we complete the documentation that was, let's say, drafted in the previous sprint. Mm-hmm. And we've got 1 week, you know, where we can add all the high-level content, improve the instructions, and then also test it. And that is more or less how it works.
It's an interesting... Yeah, I think that's a way that a number of companies are going. I think the first person to suggest this working with the developer tools approach was Rona McNamara of Google. I remember seeing a presentation that she did maybe 3 years ago, which is one of these things, wow, that's a clever idea. You mentioned to me that the developers were using AngularJS. Are the technical authors using that as well? Is everyone using the same tools to write content, or is there a case of using different tools but a way of sharing the content? How technical have the technical authors had to get?
Yeah, that's a very good question. When we started to adopt this method, or actually even before, I already had two of my technical writers who were really very much interested in APIs, software development. So I thought that the best way to follow this process and then this methodology was really to create an API content team of specialized writers. Right. So this obviously has created a bit of a split within the team. Now, I used to have six technical writers, and they were sort of interchangeable. They actually had some areas of expertise, but some of them were more technical, some less, but they all worked on the same kind of projects. Now I've got a team of three people who work on APIs, so mm-hmm. to provide the integration content, and they have a lot of knowledge in software engineering and code. And then I've got a separate group of three other writers who write the more high-level content for let's say, for the support phase when our customers start using their products and they need support and FAQs and things like that. So it's more high level. In terms of what tools they use, we currently are in the process of migrating all of our documentation to GitHub and using GitHub as a content management system. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this meant that the technical writers had to learn to use new tools and not the traditional authoring tools. Yes.
Yes. So we've talked, what we haven't talked about is who this content's for and what it's there to do. You posted an article on LinkedIn about the plans for a developer hub and the concept of developer experience. So it's for developers, this content. Can you tell me more of its purpose and its audience?
Yeah, Developer Hub is a portal that is focused on the developer persona. The documentation that we publish there and also the tools or SDKs are all focused to support developers during the integration phase, mm-hmm. which is one of the most obviously complex and difficult ones. So we created a special environment and we designed an experience that fits that persona. We also obviously have support repositories on our main website where we provide a different experience, because in that case, we are targeting our merchants. And in many cases, the persona is not technical. They just want to know how to use our merchant user interfaces, how to create reports out of all the services that we offer, etc. So we split the two experiences, and we also thought that by doing this, we should have two separate environments.
For the merchants, you're creating the content in a different way than you are creating the content for the developers.
Yes. So while for developers, as I was saying before, the processes and also the tools are very much the same as the development teams, mm-hmm. as the ones that the development teams are using. For the merchant content, we are using more traditional tools. I don't know, our website mm-hmm. and the content management system on the website. We also use Madcap Flare to create the user guides with a tri-pane or a top navigation template that is similar and recalls the website. Mm-hmm. And we've also started using Salesforce knowledge as a tool to create FAQs that we then pull with a plugin into our main website.
And are you taking content from Flare and bringing that into SharePoint? Because there is an integration now, if I remember correctly, from Flare to SharePoint.
I know there is an integration from Flare, I think, to Salesforce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, so that's my SharePoint. Yes, I'm
Yeah. For the moment, we are not using that kind of approach. We have a knowledge base which is created within Salesforce, and it is used both by all our internal support teams mm-hmm. to write FAQs, mm-hmm. and then we pull some of them externally to our customers directly.
In developing the developer portal, you did a couple of things. One was do customer journey maps, and you did some developer experience workshops.
Yeah.
What did that involve? How successful were they? Was there anything interesting, different, unexpected that you learned by doing those workshops and doing that journey mapping?
Both the developer focus workshop that we held and also the journey map workshop were really extremely interesting. And it is actually an approach that I tend to use a lot whenever we have to build or work on specific project that require creating an experience. So when we started the developer project, what we did was to reach out to internal development teams. And I mean, we have quite a few hundreds of developers in-house who are quite opinionated. But we also reached out to the commercial teams and asked them to get some customers involved. And we were quite lucky because I must say that some of our customers, especially those from the digital vertical, were really interested in helping and supporting us. And so we organized this focus group And we brought internal developers and customer developers all together. And we had this quite large white wall, lots of post-it notes, and we divided them in teams. And we asked them to think about their ideal documentation and developer portal and think about all the features that they like. And mm-hmm. we asked them to put them on the wall. What we did after was to divide all of the post-it notes into buckets according to the topic, the theme that they were covering.
Yeah.
And the result was really extraordinary because we came up with over 100 features for our new developer hub, which we could then start and work on and create our project backlog. In terms of the journey map, this is something that I used a lot in the last 2 years. And we started mapping our customers' journey because, as a documentation team, because we wanted to understand, first of all, what were the touch points of the journey and where documentation could make an impact.
Yeah.
And I don't know, speed up processes, help self-serve more, support, etc. It was such a successful workshop because it involved support teams, implementation, sales teams, product teams, marketing, everyone, that this journey map now has become the WorldPay's customer journey map. And it's been used for so many things like marketing collateral, support, the sales process. And when I think that everything started from a small documentation team, which usually traditionally probably know they're the last heard team. And then the we are really so proud of this result. And now it's become a sort of common methodology also for new projects. And it all started from us. So that was really a very impactful experience.
Before we move on, let's take a short commercial break.
Madcap Flare offers cutting-edge technical authoring and publishing capabilities for today's technical writers and content developers, with advanced features to maximize authoring efficiency, content reuse, and multi-channel publishing. By combining Madcap Central's cloud-based collaboration, publishing, and content management functionality, authors can improve content quality, gain greater insight into tasks and production schedules, work collaboratively with teams, host content, and automate processes. Madcap Flare and Madcap Central, combining the power of desktop authoring with cloud-based collaboration, publishing, and content management. Learn more at www.madcapsoftware.com.
Welcome back. When you did the customer journey maps, did you get a usability expert in to help you, or was it a case of leading it yourself, learning as you went along? How did you get started with it?
Well, I'm a very curious person by nature. Mm. And I read a lot and I like to explore and see what others are doing. So I must say that in terms of the customer journey map, what I did was really reading a lot. And there are some very, very good examples by big companies. There is, for example, in the UK, the government digital team, they have a blog where they explain how to do things. So I don't think you necessarily need to get a consultant in. If you are quite good at organizing workshops are a part of your way of working, you probably just need to do some reading. And well, you also talked a lot about journey maps. So I just looked around, put together ideas and the best methodology I thought that would work with our teams. I think the key is getting people's engagement. In terms of my role as the leader of the content team, I try and do a lot of internal networking and make sure that my team is really visible to the business. So that creates interest. And we actually had a lot of engagement from teams.
We covered journey mapping on one of our online courses on content strategy. One thing that stands out from what you've just said there is the importance of leadership and leading a team. And interacting with the other departments, getting those communication links in place so that people, other departments are willing to get involved in planning and attending workshops and that side of things. I've got a note here from something I wanted to ask, and this is, I can't recall what prompted me to ask this, but it may have been in your presentation or may have been from the article. It's about the quick start documents. I suspect it was because of the process that you went through of the workshops. There was an identification of a need to create quick start documents. Am I right in remembering that? And what have you done with the quick start documents? What's their purpose and what's in them?
So quick start documents are a nightmare that I take with me, that I've been taking with me now for quite a few years.
I remember. That's a subject, don't you?
No. That's a good question. So when I was working in engineering, you know, rules and regulations on documentation are really very strict. Compliance is important also to get the CE marking for in Europe, no? When we changed the way we were providing documentation and we moved from the hard copy, which is required by regulations, we moved everything to CDs, which was big innovation. Nowadays, people would laugh if they received a CD with the user guide. So to be compliant to regulations, we started creating quick start guides where we had all the, in that case, all the security information and instructions to set up and start using the product. When I moved here to Worldpay, sometimes though we had these guides that were PDF guides that were, I don't know, 1,000 pages. And the question was, where do you start from? Now that we are building our guides as web experiences, I thought we really need to focus to make sure that developers can go to an area, to a section of the documentation where they just can follow some basic steps and they can get started. So in our new documentation, we have a general section that provides all the background information that you might want to read if you want to know more about payments and the technical aspects of payment processing. But then you are directly taken to the quick start. If you want to skip all the high-level information, if you're not interested, and you can just go to this section, which is the starting point of the guide, the first page of the web guide and of the experience. Then you can go and explore things in more detail, but that is where you start from.
There was a presentation last year by Caroline Loveridge about how Thermo, which is a mass spectrometer company, created like recipe books, which get people to achieve completing one narrow task, one specific way of installing and using their machine. And from that, they can, having succeeded in doing that, they can then look at the more complicated things. And that's similar in that you're getting people to achieve something quickly. In terms of enabling users to find the developers in particular, to find the documentation that they need, have you done any changes to the search or navigation or the other ways in which you've structured the information?
Yeah, that was actually a big issue for us because we offer such a wide range of products and services, and we are a very complex company, you know, that sometimes it is not clear to developers which API they should use to integrate. And in a few cases in the past, they started integrating with the wrong API, and we just realized when it was too late, which is really bad. What we did, this was actually one of the outcomes of the developer focus workshop, to create a sort of wizard to help developers go to the documentation that they need. When we were in the development phase of the new portal, we reached out to developers, and actually they don't like wizards. It's something that interrupts their experience, or even in what if they access portal and they start being asked questions, it's something that they don't like. So we decided to go for a more traditional filtering system, which is very similar to the one, the sort of Amazon style filtering system, where you can select a number of features, for example, or the countries where you're going to use that kind of payment. And from there, you can get down to the documentation that is relevant.
So the table of contents and navigation changes as you tick different boxes, and it takes away the topics that won't be relevant to the way in which you're working or the location that you're working as well.
Yeah, exactly. That was funny because when we were looking for how to solve this problem, there was one of our product managers who was working on the project with us, who is really a passionate runner. He sent us the link of his running shoes company, which uses this methodology. And it was, and we thought, yeah, that's a brilliant idea. Now you just select what kind of, I don't know, track you're going to run. And if you're going to, I don't know, run 3 hours every day or, I don't know, 3 hours a week, that makes a change. And we followed a similar methodology for our filtering system.
There's an API documentation set that I've seen somebody present on that theme. Often with these things, they're often developed in-house. They're not using an off-the-shelf product to do it, but you can do it with metadata and conditional text to hide and reveal stuff. I think there's certainly that feature within some of the help tools to do that. In doing all of this, what have been the big issues that you faced? What have been the biggest challenges in getting this done? You talked about a big bucket of 100 or more topics. What have been the big issues for you?
Well, I think the big issue was really to control expectations. It is probably the first time that we work as a team on a project, which is more like building up a product. We're quite used now to just writing our documentation and seeing what it looks like straight away. While obviously with development, you have sprints, you have phases. Sometimes things don't look exactly how you would like to see them. So it has been challenging, let's say, for the whole team to work on this project because we didn't have so much control on it, on the development itself. But on the other side, I think it's been really fascinating and interesting because we had really the opportunity of building up the experience and also being able to steer decisions in terms of things that we care a lot about, like, I don't know, the style sheet and the look and feel and how the user interface should look like. So it's been really nice. In terms of other issues, obviously keep all our stakeholders constantly engaged. We have the sponsorship from product teams and commercial teams, and obviously they have high expectations on this. So it's keeping them engaged and also positive about the result. That has been obviously a big thing.
What measures have you put in place to assess that you're going forwards, not going backwards?
In this phase, so we've just completed the first development phase and we are carrying out the user testing. So this is a very critical and important phase to us. We have managed to involve as many people, internal developers, our implementation teams and our customer developers to test the documentation. We're doing a scenario testing. So they have some very fixed tasks that they have to accomplish. And we are doing both qualitative and quantitative measurements to understand if the experience is working. And tomorrow, actually, we have an internal hackathon, which we are running with our internal development teams and some partners, where we are going to test some new features of our new API together with the documentation. Then obviously going on, once we launch the developer hub, we will have, and we already have all the analytics in place, we can really see what users are searching for. If we have been successful, for example, with the metadata, with the tags, and we can use the analytics to measure this.
This really does sound like the approach of the gov.uk and the government digital service team. It really does. What seems to be very, I'm getting the impression it's very much a similar style and approach to what GDS has done, and another example of the rightness and benefits by taking that type of approach.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the greatest thing of these last years is that there is a lot of information around, and the people are really keen and open to share what they're doing, how they're doing things. Well, yourself, the government, they have an amazing blog, and also all these meetups and conferences where you can go. And also, I think the fact that all of these events are open, you don't have to pay a fee. You just go, show up, listen. No, this is really interesting, though, as an approach. It's like having things open source. And the information, the practices, the approach, the processes, they are all open sourced and shared. And this is really so, so fascinating. It's, we're living in interesting times.
Yes, the Chinese curse. Yes, that's true. So is the developer portal live? And if it is, where do people go to have a look at the work that you've done?
Okay, no, it's not live yet. It will be soon. We will be making it live as a beta initially for a couple of months. We are aiming to have it live as a beta towards mid-June and then run it as a beta for a couple of months until the end of the summer. Our goal is to have it live in September. Since we have merged with another company now, I guess that in a few months we will probably have to rebrand everything. So we are still in a sort of standby phase right now. But yeah, we're aiming to have it live and officially replacing the existing developer.worldpay.com by September.
I did have a question about what plans you have for the future, but the future is to get the developer site up live later in the year, I guess. That's probably going to keep you busy for a while.
Yes, that will keep us busy for a while. And then obviously, since now we had these two large companies now getting together, and the other one is Vantiv, which is the largest US acquirer, and they have their own developer portal, which is based on a completely different technology. So the next phase is obviously to merge the two experiences together. So while, for example, we are very, very strong in terms of the way we provide documentation, they are very strong with their community. So they have a developer community, which is really a very interesting thing. It's very well managed. They have developer evangelists, they provide a lot of support, and they use this kind of approach towards their customers, developers. So going forward, we've got some really interesting work to merge the documentation with the community, and that would provide a complete experience.
Very interesting to see how, and the impact of having the community with the documentation. That's a tasty one for another episode at some point, another interview or chat at some point in the future. I think that's probably an ideal point to wrap things up. Apart from the question, well, two other questions that I always ask when talking to people. One is, if you were to pass on one piece of advice to other technical people involved with technical documentation, what it would be. And the other question is there anything else I should have asked you? But again, one question at a time. In terms of one piece of advice for people that might be listening to this to take away, is there anything particular that you'd like to share?
Well, I think that if I had to give an advice to a technical writer or a communicator, I would say stay curious, look around, explore, read a lot. There is so much interesting content and there are so many interesting ways in which it is provided to the reader out there on the web that the more we stay curious, the more we can improve.
Is there anything else I should have asked you that I haven't asked you?
Well, we were talking before about documentation as a code, as a principle, as a way, a new way of working. And I just will spend a couple of minutes to talk about a new way that we started working with development teams, which is more documentation in code. One of the tools that we are developing for the new developer hub is an API service discovery tool, which is done using Hypermedia. It's a very interesting tool because it connects, let's say this, I'm giving really a very high level description, but it connects the API, the documentation user interface. What we've started doing is train developers to write content that is then pulled to the developer portal. This means that obviously we know that developers already spend a lot of time documenting what they have developed. So it isn't really extra work to the teams. And the content that they write is mainly related to the API reference. So it is just a few paragraphs and bits of code. The result is, for the user, is an interface where they can access the API reference, but also test the code straight away, which is really interesting, because it puts together two tools that traditionally were separate, like the API reference, which is basically documentation, and the sort of sandbox.
And is that live or is that going to be live?
We are hacking it tomorrow. We are testing it tomorrow, yes. So tomorrow we have this internal hackathon where we are testing the API.
The system is extracting from the code the comments that the developers have written and tagged as to be published as documentation or assistance content to go with the sandbox. Is that the...
Yeah, that's more or less the principle. Yes, exactly. And obviously, in this case, the technical writer acts more as the editor and the reviewer, and they are part of the development team. So they sit with the development team and they can check that everything that has been written is okay.
Oh, it'll be interesting to see how your hackathon goes tomorrow then.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad I asked the question. If there was anything else we should cover, because that is important information. And if people want to keep in touch with what you're up to, you're posting stuff on LinkedIn, you're on Twitter as at Stella Crowhurst, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, anyone can reach me.
Lovely. Estella, it's been great talking. Yes, thank you. Thank you for your time. And I'm sure people will be absolutely fascinated to see the developments and approaches that you've taken at Worldpay.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'll stop the recording now.
For having me.
What did you think of Worldpay's approach? Let me know. You can contact me by email, ellis@cherryleaf.com, and Ellis is ELLIS, or on Twitter at Ellis Pratt, and that's ELLISPRATT. I found how they used workshops to get everybody involved very interesting, and I also found it interesting the way in which they were working within the Agile environment, starting to write documentation in week two of a sprint, doing a minimal viable document, and then refining the content in future sprints, and then reviewing next drafts in the next sprint after that, so they kept up a momentum. You'll find the show notes and links to some of the topics covered on cherryleaf.podbean.com, and Podbean is P-O-D-B-E-A-N. And finally, a plug for Cherryleaf, our projects team. We get involved with creating content at an agreed price for clients. So if you need some documentation, then do bear us in mind. And again, if you contact me, ellis@cherryleaf.com, we can start a conversation, see if we can help you the best way in which we can help you. So finally, for this podcast episode, thank you for listening.